Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBerry here, and we are back again. We are doing a very special microsode. This is one that I think all four of us were actually very eager to talk about, which is very rare. I mean, you know, a lot of times the comic book movies tend to be a common bond between all of us and a topic that we all like to discuss. But this still falls into comic book land. Graphic novel land, but is outside of the MCU, outside of the DCEU, I guess it's still a thing. But this was also something that as soon as we all finished binging it, we got into our group chat and said, okay, so are we doing a special episode just about this? And the answer was a resounding yes. And we are gathered here in the wee hours of the morning in some areas, in some time zones, to sit here and discuss a very special miniseries. So I realized that in our last episode, I jumped straight into it because we were on a time constraint, but I still want to, and I didn't introduce everybody, but I want to make sure that we do that. So joining me on the East Coast, safe and sound and dry as a bone, we've got Eric.
Hello.
And BJ.
Hey, hey.
And fighting the rising sun that is about to start coming up in the West Coast, we've got Brian.
Good morning.
Girl, she'll get a lot happier once we start talking about the topic, but it is literally the wee hours of the morning over on the West Coast. So let's jump into this, y'all. We are here to talk about The Sandman. So, for those who may or may not know, The Sandman is an American fantasy drama television series based on the 1989 to 1996 comic book written by Neil Gaiman, published by DC Comics. The series was developed by Gaiman, David S. Goyer, and Alan Heinberg for the streaming service Netflix, and is produced by DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television. Like the comic, The Sandman tells the story of Dream/Morpheus, the titular Sandman, and the series stars Tom Sturridge as the title character, with Boyd Holbrook, Vivian, I'm going to say this so wrong, so please don't yell at me too much at your speakers, so Vivian Achempong, say that as you will, and Patton Oswalt in supporting roles, along with a myriad of additional guest stars and supporting characters. So this is going to be, if you listen to our Thor Love and Thunder microsode, we have switched up the way that we're doing our micros, our recaps a little bit here. Instead of us each going individually, we're going to do one at a time, throw out a piece of things that we liked, maybe things that needed improving, and maybe some hopes for a potential season two for this series. So I'm going to throw it over because this is, I know, a series that is near and dear to his grumpy heart this morning. I'm going to throw it over to Brian for our first thing that you enjoyed, loved, couldn't get enough of in The Sandman?
Oh, such a hard choice. So, like Pat said, I've followed this series. I didn't read it when it came out. I will admit, I was a little young. I don't think I was back into comics, or I wasn't. No. Yeah, I had read comics prior. I was out of comics for a bit when this came out. I wasn't tracking it until I was much older. Went to my comic shop, our comic shop in Orlando, a comic shop, literally the title. And they had it on the shelf, I think, as a graphic novel at the time. And I was like, you know what? This is interesting. I'm familiar with Neil Gaiman, but hadn't gotten around to read this. Anyway, so I read this series voraciously, devoured the whole thing, have all of the leather bound, I think they're leather, omnibus, you know, absolute editions of the series. It's been one of my favorites. Recommend it to a lot of people, yada, yada, yada. So when this was announced, very worried, considering not all comic book adaptations are created equal. There have been some amazing ones and there have been some horrid ones. But the fact that Neil was involved in this and has not just that he was involved in this, he is involved in adapting this very directly. He has now, after Good Omens and American Gods, gotten his hands into, and Doctor Who, television work in a very direct way. I felt that the time was right and the people that he was assembling were correct. And that includes all of the aforementioned cast. They are spectacular without an exception, I think. But one of my favorite things about this whole series was just how well it was adapted, and so well that I would say this is an improvement on the original series. And that's not something you get often. It's usually, you know, like, oh, it's different and maybe it's a little better, but you're always like, but it's not the same. It really is better in most ways. There's a few things that you could dig in and kind of go, well, I wish they had done more of that. But basically this first series, season adapts the first two, trades, of the series. And it does it very well. And specifically, I will say, as my thing I liked, the improvements on the 24/7 episode, which is a bottle episode about a diner in which it's a snapshot of what's going on in the world around it, with people getting more and more fixated on their heart's desires and losing all inhibitions to the point of like just horrid, horrible, animalistic results, catastrophic, almost apocalyptic results. This episode is fantastic in the series because it really doesn't involve the main character of Morpheus much. It really is just about the these people in a diner. And there is a now I can't remember. What was the queer character? What was their gender?
Sorry, which one? There's like 40 of them.
Oh, you're right. Oh my god, sorry.
The one it's easier to ask which was the straight character. What was their name?
Fair. What was the one with the girlfriend? What was their name? Do you guys remember? I ask only because I don't want to say lesbian, but it could have been. I think they were lesbian. Let's go with that. But I don't know if that's true. They were lesbian in the comic book. Let's just do that. Because actually,
yes, and they were pretty much coded as a lesbian in the in the show as well.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I just want to make sure I got that right. I was like, they handled that storyline better as just one example, because in the comic book, she starts like making out with and having sex actually with like a guy. But in this they kept that authenticity of, you know, she's a lesbian. She's not going to just suddenly start fucking this guy. But the freaking cook though, man, like that's one of those moments in dialogue that I almost sat there and go, was this the choice you wanted? Because if it is, wow, brave. He basically admits to fucking this woman's child. Now, at first, I don't think they said child, but certainly the impression is that this is this is her son who lives with her. And so you're sitting there like, oh my God, he is admitting to child, like raping a child or molesting a child at the very least. And then they later follow that up with, oh no, he's come back from college or something. So they kind of,
yeah, they say 21. I know. Cause yeah. I got really worried during that one. I was like, oh my God, like that was crazy. And then, oh shit.
Watching the reactions, watching the reactions of people online when they're like, oh. But I think it's some, she mentions him coming home, but right. I don't think she says college till no, he says it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
like,
that's good.
Like she mentions it prior, because she's talking about writing, but then she talks about, she enjoys having her son home.
That's
so it's like, it's slightly implied before he's like, I fuck your son and he fucks me. And then she's like, she uses the word child. Like he's like, he's just a kid. And then he's like, he's 21.
That's
so,
it.
Okay, but it's definitely this really it the build in that episode of like what the fuck is happening, and you know nothing good is about to happen, but it just you're like your heart is racing. By the time it gets to where everybody just starts completely losing all their barriers, you're like it's nuts.
It is in the comics a gruesome ending, but it does have a lot of. There's sexual content in this too. Like they show like different people pairing off. But anyway, that episode was just one I remembered reading and just being like horrified by, as you're meant to, but just seeing it brought to screen and improved on. Gaiman has talked a lot about how he saw this series as a chance to sort of get some things better, like to handle certain topics better. You know, I don't think he's making huge structural changes as much, but as in any adaptation, you have to kind of focus on this. But anyway, that is just my example of how this show is a fantastic adaptation in the best ways. And I'm sure there's many other things that we loved about it, but that's where I want to start.
Yeah, that episode, and I came onto this even later. I've known about the Sandman, but I didn't read any of the books, and I just came into the show not really knowing much of anything. And that diner episode, shit, man, like that was insane. But I've heard a lot of people talk about the fact that it was improved, and even reading some stuff about the fact that he originally, it was a 24 page comic. So he was trying to do like an hour per page and showcase that whole thing. And then that, just he had to scrap that idea because it was just kind of the way that it was evolving took it to a different level. So to see it fleshed out in a cinematic experience, damn, that was really good. Eric, let's throw it over to you. What was a great takeaway from this series?
Well, the battle episode was probably kind of my favorite of the series, but we just talked about that. A good follow-up though is the whole sequence of him and Death.
Oh, and you took my first one, damn. Oh, so good,
because he kind of finished his quest that he was on for the first half of the series, and both. It's also a good foil for us as the viewer, and probably also it was in the comics as foil for the reader, is, okay, he's done with his quest. Now what's going to happen? And we have to find new purpose in the viewing, and also he has to find new purpose in what he's going to do now that he's back and he's got all his stuff, and what does he do now? And so this walk around with Death, watching her do her work and how she talks about having times where she almost lost her way and realized what her real purpose was. It was beautiful. It was touching. It was sad. But you know, it kind of had you reevaluate that death can be really a gift for people and doesn't have to always be scary. And they showed it as just having a friendly face there at the end to guide you to the end. And I just thought that was beautiful.
I really love, and the pronunciation for her name is Akiampong. Vivian Akiampong. You know what's funny is for me, when I first, because it's like Brian, I didn't really start into Sandman till it started being done in trades. And then I had a ton of older goth friends in college that literally just had, they were like, do you want to trade? Do you want individual issues? How do you want to read it? Like, you want a novel? I have a novel. Like, it was one of those things that was thrust upon me, but I always enjoyed it. Also, it's a DC property. So it is part of
Sandman pushers you have in your life.
Oh yeah. Oh, it was a big thing. And it was,
they
funny
open up their trench coat and they're like, what do you want? Trades, individual issues?
Absolutely. 100%.
The first taste is free. The first taste is free.
It was like, hey, oh no. They were like, read it all. They would literally just take it out of their closet and be like, I know we're supposed to go to a food festival today, but we're just sitting here reading Sandman, bitch. But that take on death resonated with me super hard when I was growing up, because that whole idea, like, yes, death is, like, traditionally is depicted as scary. I mean, I don't find skeletons all that scary anymore, but it's always been depicted as like this thing that you need to run from. It's coming to get you. But even in the comics and in the show, every depiction of death has always been like, it's rough enough going through this process. Like, let me just be here to kind of hang out with you and like show you what's next for your existence and everything. So yeah, I absolutely love, especially the actress they got. She just has this like energy about her, and so it's not, Vivian's not death. I kind of makes it seem like
that's Lucienne.
We're
talking Kirby Howell Baptiste.
Yes, who wasn't she in The Good Place?
Yes.
Yeah, she was Chidi's girlfriend in one of the resets.
She was the professor. Yes. Yep.
She was a neuroscience.
I want to say Simone, but I'm not. I feel like I'm wrong on that.
That's 100%. Ever since, I think that's the first thing I ever saw her in, or like that act automatically resonated with me. But just like her inflections, her voice, especially when she's at the end of the episode where she's like, that guy's just like, "Did you see that car? It almost hit me." She's like, "It was this close," and she's like, "This close, huh?" She's like, let's go take a walk. And I don't know. It's just, and especially her interactions with Dream. It was like such a really great like sibling moment. I always love it when people get that sibling relationship spot on. So yeah, I agree with you, Eric. That I really, really liked that that whole episode. It was great.
And it's an odd palate cleanser.
Uh-huh.
Like I know that, you know, Eric, you mentioned it as kind of a almost a reset after that first quest is done. But when we're coming out of the 24/7, when we're coming out of that diner episode, it is so intense and so visceral and dark. You would think that the episode featuring death, you know, like was it The Sound of Her Wings is the title of the episode. You would think, okay, we're just in for another heavy episode. And it's not. It is bright. They're outside. You know, a lot of it is set outside. It restores a bit of faith in humanity, in the mortal waking realm for Morpheus. And it gives us that chance to just decompress. And like you both have said, just kind of give that change of how you view death. I mean, honestly, even the scene where with the baby, you know, where when you talk about SIDS, like that's a huge thing, that how do you deal with that? How do you handle that? And it was such a moment. But at the same time, it was like when you see death and how Kirby portrays this, it's just so warm. And it's funny because as you were talking about this, the thing that I think one of the pieces of media that I was exposed to well before this that I think took a little bit of inspiration from it is Charmed. Because if you go back to like season two or three, I think it was three, because I think they were foreshadowing the end of the season. Death becomes a character, and it's kind of portrayed in the same fashion, because Prue ends up, there's a whole episode where Prue like does a day with Death. And, you know, we know that, you know, when you look back on it, if you weren't watching it live, knowing that that was what was coming at the end of the season, and that that eventually Shannon Doherty's departure from Charmed meant that they were going to kill Prue. Yeah, right. Yes. Okay. I had to make sure which P I was talking about and to get it right. it was spoiler alert for a very old show at this point, but it definitely feels like it took that inspiration where it was having somebody, having that friendly face, having that person there to welcome you and make that transition easier. But that episode was definitely, it was amazing. BJ, let's transition over to you. What was some highlights from this?
So the kind of, to kind of carry off of what Eric said, I have to say just the entire casting of The Endless. I mean, the casting across the board was, I mean, I would, every episode that when they introduced a new character, I was just floored. Like, and then what Brian said with just like how Neil Gaiman wanted to update things and kind of feel like get some more things right. I was it Jenna Louise Coleman as Joanna Constantine. I was like, she was only there, I think she was there for one whole episode and then like a little bit of another one, but like knocked it out of the fucking park. Like just absolutely embraced the character, all facets of the character, and then Desire. Absolutely. I was at their non-binary Mason Alexander Park. They were just absolutely dripping with like how I envision Desire, but just like the idea of Desire. And then I'm not sure.
Real quick, before you move on,
yeah,
is it wrong that when Lucifer asked about his siblings and she went Desire, Despair, that I was I the only one that Annie Lennox at that point and did and started singing No More I Love Yous? Like the way that she said it. It was just so it was so Annie Lennox at that point. I was like, oh, the way that this is written, like that had to have been a thought of like Desire, Despair, Desire, so many monsters. Like I just when you said Desire, oh, yeah, and Despair, I was like, oh, I need to, yeah.
Yeah, it was so funny because like and then just the minute details on the character, like what they're wearing, how they're moving. If you pay really, really close attention to Desire, when they're like, oh, I got on your skin, didn't I? And then they're like, next time I'll draw blood. Their eyes like dilate significantly. And I was like, oh, like a cat's, because they're in that little cat suit, like when Dream comes over and they're just kind of rolling around in the chair. And I'm like, it makes me want to see more of The Endless, because we still have Destruction, Destiny, and Delirium. And I'm very excited to see those three pop up if and when. I'm mostly sure they're going to get renewed for a second season, but it's Netflix and it's weird. But yeah, no, just the detail in every single character and their casting, even the Unity, God, oh, the Corinthian. Oh, ooh, my God. I was like, by the end of the show, I wanted to sleep with him. I was like, come on. I'm like, but just like the way they moved, talked, all the serial killers at the serial convention, like the casting was just out of this world for me. Like, I can't think of a single character casted in this show that I would change. I can't. Yeah. I honestly, I can't even think of an extra.
He overlooked probably one of the most pitch perfect casting that they did. Stephen Fry played Fiddler's Green, aka G.K. Chesterton, another one of my favorite writers. Like, I don't think I realized that that was happening. And then he shows up and I was just like, stop it. Like, you've just made all of the things in my head come true. Like, I have to. I'm sorry. I hate doing this to you. And this is only because it's an important distinction. So Jenna Coleman plays Joanna Constantine. That's the pronunciation that the movie's gotten, the TV, everybody else gets wrong.
It's Constantine.
If it's Keanu Reeves, it's Constantine. If it's Jenna Coleman, her casting, like, she, that was an interesting choice, and I wasn't sure, like, okay, it separates it very cleanly from the comics version, which in the comic it is the Constantine you're thinking of. But I love that they kept the gender of the girlfriend the same to make her a queer character. Whereas, I mean, John's bi, he's gotten around, but like, I really appreciated
King
that.
Shark, you know?
King Shark,
that's
right. Oh my God.
Yeah. I think that was a there was a licensing issue, I think, is what kind of that came from.
I don't believe that's the case, but either way.
Well, not the queer coding of it, but the gender swap was.
Yeah.
Because of the rights to John Constantine.
Yeah.
Because DC owns him. And this is, even though it's produced by DC and Warner, it's still not, like, the rights are very tricky. So all of the DC references are essentially scrubbed out of the show.
Right.
So they did the gender swap.
I thought that was by design to separate, not because they couldn't get the rights. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was to separate the character, but it was because of a rights issue. So it's both.
Okay. But yeah,
I was reading up on that a little bit and that's it's a weird rights thing, and that's why some of the backstories are probably not going to be the same or may not be told if we get more Sandman because of the rights.
Well, what's funny is, and I guess it's because it's also not just DC, Cain and Abel is actually a DC version of Cain and Abel from the Bible. So that's a curious case where they took the design of the character straight out of DC. John Dee is actually Dr. Destiny, who's a supervillain, and he's the one who, the diner and the ruby and all that crap. And they changed his stuff quite a lot because I think that's one of those examples where they had to, I guess. So, I mean, I don't think it hurts it at all. In fact, I think it only helps it because Sandman was always, even as much as part of a DC universe, it really was separate in Vertigo. Vertigo had crossover moments like Swamp Thing and Constantine and whoever else like showed up. But overall, it was always unto itself. I think in the more modern era, it's blended a bit more into the universe. But they've traditionally, even with Vertigo gone, they've kind of kept Sandman a little separate. And you didn't mention Gwendolyn Christie. Playing Lucifer, which if you go back again to the comic, it was this non-binary, but androgynous non-binary, whatever, rendering who kind of looked like Bowie almost. And they nailed it with her. Oh my God. Like, just like BJ, you're saying, it just, every casting choice was inspired.
Her smile.
Yeah.
That like Dolores Umbridge, like, I'm going to say, I don't have to be menacing because I'm fucking Lucifer. Like, just like that whole, the mannerisms of her where she's just lightly walking around, the little smiles, the little chuckles. And then when he says the phrase, like, thank you, Lucifer, I will make sure that your scene is honorable and intact. And that's when the facade starts to break. And Lucifer's like, surely you jest. And I was like, get out now. Stop being cocky. You got your shit. Run. So
I do not jest, and please don't call me Shirley.
But yeah, it was, oh my God. Yeah, the cat.
I just dated myself very much on that with that joke. There is a certain age range that will understand and appreciate that joke.
We kept a poker face, but I'm pretty sure all of us.
I mean, I know this group understood it for sure.
But yeah, no, absolutely the casting.
That game between the two of them, as when the demon chose Lucifer as his champion. Oh, so good. And the memes that have come out of that, where it's like Lucifer is like, I am, you know, a cis white man,
podcasting, women hating, what was one? I am a Karen. Manager requesting, annoyance driven.
Oh no, I actually had it backwards. Where Dream was like, I am a cis white man who has everything, and then Lucifer is like, I am pronouns, and then it shows Dream like curled up and dying. So many good memes that have come out of it. So one of the things that I enjoyed greatly was not the death of the first raven, which I cannot remember the name of, but that was Dream's raven at the start of the series. But then we get introduced to Matthew, the raven, a couple of episodes in, I think in like episode three, roughly, and voiced by Patton Oswalt. And if you've watched the Honest trailer, the best thing that they said about this character was that it was either Patton Oswalt being too lazy to change his voice for the role, or admitting the fact that he sounds like a talking bird. And it was absolutely true. Matthew the Raven is one of those characters I was referencing just a minute ago, who has a DC tied background, was a character from Swamp Thing that eventually crossed over into the Sandman world as Matthew the Raven. So if we do get any backstory on Matthew, it probably will be changed. But a great sidekick, very much in a lot of ways, acts as the viewer's stand-in, because mm-hmm. there are a lot of things that he doesn't understand, doesn't know
yep.
about the dreaming, about, you know, what's going on. And gets to ask the questions that maybe the viewer might be asking, especially if they're new to the series and to the Sandman world in general. But I mean, like, one of the most iconic lines, fuck it, we're going to hell. Like, honestly, and said by Patton Oswalt, it's just so amazing. So to tie into the casting that we were just talking about, Matthew was definitely a high point for me throughout the series.
I love Marv. That was a nice surprise. Mark Hamill as Marv, the janitor of the Dreaming. That was just a wonderful out of like, because I think I had heard he was involved with the show, but like out of nowhere Marv just shows up. And what's funny is I've been listening to the radio drama they did, where they have the guy that played Professor Xavier in
James McAvoy
plays Dream. And yeah, Kevin Smith plays Marv.
There's a handful of people, just as a quick offshoot to that, I pulled up the fandom wiki. So from that voice, from that audio series, James McAvoy, he plays the golden hair man in the Netflix show, voices Dream. David Tennant, who portrays Don in the Netflix show, voiced Loki in the audio series. Michael Sheen plays Paul on Netflix, voiced Lucifer in the audio drama. Arthur Darvill is Richard Maddock on Netflix, voiced William Shakespeare in the audio drama. Niamh Walsh played the young Ethel Cripps, voiced Nuala. And then Carrie Shale, who portrays Nimrod in the Netflix series, voiced Abel, Azazel, Brute, and Puck in the audio drama.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of crossover between that.
For a while, the audio drama was the closest thing we thought we were going to get to an adaptation. And I mean, it's also quite a joy and a gem, but this definitely.
And they just dropped the third book. They dropped it. Yeah.
Did not see that yet. Oh, or hear that yet. I gotta go dig that up for my next adventure somewhere. But
I think literally days ago. So you're not too far behind. It's, I think it was like maybe within the past couple of days from when we were recording. So it literally just came out and was kind of a surprise drop for audiobook fans.
I feel like those are on Audible. I think that's where I listened to it. But yeah,
I think you're right.
That's where I got it.
If anyone is like, oh my God, what's going to happen to the future of the show? Is it going to be renewed? Somebody's going to pick it up. But you can go now and start listening to these, and of course you can go read them. But you know, if you're of a lot of the folks who just, and I will say the pacing of the comics, that's one thing. I mean, I know I'm kind of jumping in a little bit, but the pacing of the original first, especially the first trade and the art style, it's a little rough at times. And even as a comic book reader, I was kind of like, oof. I got through it, but it was like reminded of just how that era was in comics. So I don't know that I would say go out and get that first trade unless you really, really, really want to see where it came from and just take your time, be ready for it to be a little surprising and not always in a good way. But yeah, no, yep. The casting was so good. I mean, yeah, anyway. So Patton, okay, I will say this. Patton, I love Patton Oswalt. I think anyone who knows anything, at least about my preferences, knows I love Patton Oswalt. He's great. One of my favorite comedians of all time. I wish he had done something with his voice. I don't know. For me, it took me out of it for a hot second when I was like, oh yeah, Patton's playing the bird. But great. Overall, love the character Matthew. And yeah, I just, I don't know. That was if I had to pick one negative thing, and I mean, this is really, I think it.
We're not at that point yet. We're not there yet.
Well, but it's the same. Spoiler alert. That's my only negative. So it's all up from here, you know?
I would say foreshadowing, but that's a lot. I think that's a little bit more than foreshadowing. But dear listeners, we hope that you're enjoying this episode and every other episode that we put out for you on the Nerdy Show Network. If you are so inclined, go check out our website at flameonshow.com. There we have all of our links to our Twitch accounts, to our social media, to our Threadless shop. There are some great things that you can purchase in the Threadless shop where you can rock your Flame On swag, just like friend of the pod, Jamie. Be like Jamie. Go get yourself some swag from the Threadless shop. And I actually think Brian has some. I was rocking this Flame On swag here in Chicago. So go get your own. Put a photo up on social media. Tag us. We would love to see it. And we also have a link to our Patreon. If you want to go there directly, it's patreon.com/flameonshow. And you can join at any one of the four tiers. We are in the process of getting ourselves caught up on everything. And we've got a lot of great content coming your way. So you can join any one of those four levels and become a patron for Flame On Show and help us continue doing what we love to do for you here. So that's flameonshow.com and patreon.com/flameonshow.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
All right. So real quick, let's do a little round robin and throw out some extra things that tickled our fancy from the show before we move on to maybe some improvements for a potential season two. We hope that there will be a season two. This is one of the most expensive shows being produced right now. So we know how streaming services love to try to cut costs. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Fingers crossed, toes crossed.
I think the only show more expensive right now is Rings of Power, another show that we will be talking about in detail at some point.
You're not wrong. I think this was a $160 million show to produce.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's, I mean, Neil Gaiman was saying that even like on Twitter, it was like, even though this has been a top level binge watched at number of hours, like all of that, and that for weeks it sat at number one on like the top 10, this is still a really expensive show. And I mean, it's also tempering expectations, but damn, like, yeah. Mm. She an expensive one to produce. But let's throw out some last positive takeaways from the show before we move on. What y'all got for me?
Music. Oh, the soundtrack.
Makes the people come together. Yeah.
Oh, but, not Madonna. Sorry.
My least favorite Madonna album.
Aha!
Gotcha. Gotcha with the side.
I mean, I'm not gonna say anything about it because I'm a fan of older Madonna, music Madonna. Like, give me the Something to Remember compilation album where it's just her ballads from like the 80s to like the late 90s. That right there, I could sit with that album and just be perfectly happy.
I don't even think music is not older Madonna. I mean, it's not classic Madonna, but like compared to the shit she's put out, and I literally mean the shit that's come out in the last few years that she did. That's like the golden age. But yeah, the music, David Buckley, who I had never heard of in my life, when they announced Buckley was doing the score, I was like, who are you? And you go back and you look at some of his previous stuff, and he's definitely, I mean, he did like a Jason Bourne movie. I mean, he's done stuff, but nothing that ever stood out. But yeah, BJ, like that first track that's on the soundtrack, which is, I think, the opening credits.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. There's some other stuff in there. It's pretty good. But what was nice is it added like atmospherics. Like a lot of it was very complimentary to the creepy factor as you would want. And then with still some beautiful, every time they would go back to the dreaming and they would do the recap on the theme, it was just like, oh, yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, it was, for me, it was just there are moments where I wasn't expecting to build suspense. Like, I wasn't expecting to be like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And it was I went back and watched that whole last episode with the serial convention and everything. And just like, about halfway into the episode, I had to pause to go. I went to go grab a drink or something, and I get downstairs and I'm like, I'm exhausted. I'm like, just the like, especially when Fiddler's Green is running in and seeing all the different panels and slowly realizing, like, oh no, this should back up
for people who have not seen that or read this. The cereal convention is what they call it, but it is not a food snack, breakfast time food snack. It is instead a serial killers convention that they are not so. I mean, they're hiding it, but they're not like hiding.
They're
it.
Collectors. They're not serial killers. They're collectors.
Yes, which is kind of a funny sort of indictment of. I read this episode or watched and kind of thought back as sort of a indictment, maybe the wrong word, but sort of a play on the comic convention industry in some ways, which is hilarious then when you apply that lens. But any convention would do, but specifically because they're talking about collecting, it is sort of on the nose. But yeah, serial convention is such a great part of the Dollhouse storyline. I'm thrilled that the Chesterton / Fiddler's Green was a huge part of it. And they gave him a little less time, but probably the most inspired thing they added to that was John Cameron Mitchell, which when you go back, it's a little different. I believe there is still a drag queen of sorts, but it's not the focus is not given to John Cameron Mitchell's character. So I think that's another delightfully queer, addition or amplification of what was already there. And just, that whole ensemble was fun, but man, John always steals the show, whether he's Hedwig or the Tiger King.
and that was the thing I really liked, is the fact that like, cause you have like the soundtrack to the show, but then you have like the sound engineering. And then on top of that, he had like what, two or three musical numbers. And like, and honestly, I would love an entire, if they ever get a season two, I want an entire musical episode, because I feel like if he, like, you fall into the right dream, you're going to have a musical episode. But just like, just the way they treated how his dreams go, and how, like you said, when they transfer into the dreaming, chef's kiss, like, wonderful.
Yeah, one of the things that I loved was when he is collecting the rogue nightmares, and he goes with Rose to find her brother, and he's, you know, they go on that whole trek, and they find him because he's detached from the dreaming, and when he goes into like these dreams that he's having. And when I can't remember the name of the nightmare that they bring back.
Galt.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. When Galt comes back, that interaction between Lucien, Dream, and Galt, and the reflection that Galt puts onto Dream, like the manner of having to think about how he has perceived everything, and then what his time away has meant. And the fact that people change, and that nightmares can change, and the resolution to that, and reestablishing Galt as not, you know, as a dream, as a not nightmare, I guess is the best way to distinguish between Dream himself. I thought that was fantastic, and it was such a way to not only show the character growth of Dream in the episode and through this arc so far, but to have the audience reflect back about, yeah, you may have done some shitty things, or you may have done something wrong, even if it's just a situation, but to be able to take and learn from that and grow from that and be better and do better. I thought that was a fantastic lesson to be put into a show like this, for sure.
They adapted Galt from these two other dreams or nightmares called Brute and Glob. So I was sitting there the whole time, like, I don't remember Galt. And I was like, is this like a play on like John Galt from like Anne Rand or something? I was trying to figure out like what. And going back, I was like, oh, they simplified this because it just made more sense to have like the three, you know, everything's in threes, right? So Corinthian, Fiddlers, and then just Galt character. But and then they streamlined this whole her child, the child that was it, the brother's, oh, I forgot the brother's name. The superhero storyline is a big sort of DC-esque superhero focused thing, and they kept the spirit of it, you know, certainly. But it like we talked about, they kind of pulled it away from the DC universe proper, so it was actually a connection back too. As was the freaking chick who is dreaming about being pregnant. I had forgotten that that's a character related to Wonder Woman in the comics. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh yeah, crap. So yeah, but it didn't hurt it. Like I said, like the DC stuff absolutely being divorced from it had no impact whatsoever. And if anything, just clarified and made it a little more streamlined. So you didn't have to worry about all the backstories and underpinnings of this and that.
Cause as a first time being exposed to the story, that would have, like, there was no point where I was like, oh, I wish there was more backstory to this. Like, we got just enough in the show itself to say, oh, okay, cool. Like, to have some sort of connection to the character as they progress without needing a ton of this backstory that goes with it. That definitely did not hurt it, in my opinion.
Did we all watch the bonus episodes of the series that dropped, like, what, like 2 weeks after they ended the season?
Yep. That Trixie and Katya spoiled, technically.
Oh, that's right.
Wait, what?
Yes. So when they released Trixie and Katya's like Queens That Like to Watch episode for Sandman, however, it included the bonus episodes, and they released that episode. They always release it, like, I want to say a couple days at, like, when people, like, I think a standard after amount the drop, of time.
Yeah.
That people have had to binge it. So then they dropped that. Well, they dropped that with Trixie and Katya also commentating on the bonus episode. That the
I still haven't watched it. I need to go back and watch it now.
Oh,
and,
no.
And they, yeah. they pulled it, but they definitely, because I started watching it, and then after like the end of the what I thought was the last episode, it goes into another episode, and I don't ask me how I had this like this instinct attack to be like, nope.
So we've all seen the bonus episodes though, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So they're in the comic, and I went back later and I was like, oh, because at first I thought the cat one was one that they did like in a special collection. Like, no, it's right there. Just completely forgot. That's the one that Trixie spoiled. And yeah. I'm glad she did, because it's kind of a trigger warning. If you don't like seeing bad things happen to cats, just you should definitely know that some bad things are going to happen to some cats in this episode. It's
less so than I thought. Like, yeah. I saw kind of the warnings about it. I think you all in the chat had said something. And I was like, when I watched it, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I don't like what happens, definitely. But it was not as vivid or detailed as I thought.
As people yeah. kind of made it out to
no,
be.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thankfully, no. It was very not graphic. But it's necessary as a setup for what happens. So, I mean, like, get it. But the other episode really surprised me too, because it alludes to some mythology with Morpheus that connects him to a muse, Calliope, and how they had this love affair and had a child. And that child is the Greek mythic hero Orpheus. And so later in the Sandman series, like much later, they actually go back and have a whole episode. I think it's just an issue, but like where they deal with the Orpheus character and kind of tell that story. So that really delighted me. I'm sure Eric, you appreciated the, did they actually name check him or no? I forgot. I think they did.
I don't know if they say, I don't think they call him Orpheus, but they mentioned being, being together and having a child.
Okay. I thought they name checked him, but either way, it's a mythic figure special to some of us in the flame on circles. So it was neat to hear that reference. And that episode was also just so hard to watch, but also so like every creative person who's ever had like writer's block or some kind of artistic block and just the whole frustration that then twists and becomes horribly ugly in this horrible way. That episode is, it makes sense that they kind of pulled them out from the story, because it really didn't fit as cleanly into the overall sort of arc of the season. But I loved it. Yeah. I love both of those episodes.
I'll say that it's amazing how much tension and how much you can portray without showing a goddamn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, first off, because of Xanadu the Musical, I will always say Calliope, but that's just a me thing. But when he rapes Calliope, like, they don't show that at all. And I know that that's actually, like, I think it's depicted in the comic as much as you can depict it in drawn form, but it is explicit. And that is not what is shown. What, you know, the door closes and he comes out with the scratch on his face. And it's like, wow, it was intense to see like that whole thing be portrayed without having to show it. I'm also still mad that the muses give men shit when they after they rape them. Like, that's just a Yeah, that was a difficult episode to watch. It was very well done, but that was a tough one to watch. Any other last big call outs we want to do before we do a quick round of improvement and possible speculation or desires for forthcoming Sandman? All right, let's jump into Brian. Since you foreshadowed, what would be some improvements or things that you maybe didn't like about the series?
No, I mean, the only thing I really didn't like was just the voice of Matthew, which is so stupid. Who cares? I
he just sounds like a talking bird.
Yeah, he does. I now I'll never not see that. He just doesn't look like a talking bird. If you've seen Patton do stand up, he just the talking bird is the talking penguin is about the closest I could.
I was gonna say you put feathers on him. I think you can make him a bird. Oh, to be God. Honest,
that's gonna haunt my nightmares now. No, I think overall the series is great. I think obviously if they could make it less expensive and maybe make it we just need more. It's such an epic story. I'm so excited for all of the things that are coming in it. I can't accept that Netflix wouldn't back it, except that right now the streaming world is just doing bizarre and horrible things. And I just want more of it. So, Warner's figured out. I think they're going to somehow, if Amazon wasn't draining money into the Lord of the Rings franchise, maybe they'd be able to pick it up. But Bezos, sell a yacht and make some more Sandman. Come on. I'll buy more Amazon stuff if you do.
One of the things that might help is, if I remember reading correctly, it looks like Netflix is going to go away from the binge model and go to a fully... We're going back to television, y'all. Like, seriously, it's just... Yeah. We're almost completely full circle from before streaming was a thing. We're going back to weekly releases, which I'm fine with. I have no problem with this. But I think that may also help, because what happens is people sign up after the series is out, they'll binge it, and then they let their 1 week trial expire or whatever, and then they don't stick around. So these people are losing... subscriptions, they're losing all this money, and then they jack up the price for everybody else that sticks around, and then those people want to leave. So maybe this will be a thing that will help, and then they can release the Sandman in a weekly fashion, series two and anything beyond that. We'll see what happens.
I have one more thing real quick. I just thought
So
Sandman in the comics is oftentimes a little more looks like Eternity from Marvel, kind of magic-y, weird, cosmic kind of in the background. I think if they play more with that, that'd be fine with me. I mean, the way they handled it makes a lot of sense. And when you go back again to the comic, they actually do start from this more grounded, tangible Morpheus who's getting his powers. And they do it a little bit in the show. There's key sequences, and I know they're expensive, I'm sure, for the effects. But like seeing Morpheus more in that kind of crazy, ethereal version of him would be at least a nice touch every now and again, but that's the only thing. Other than that, the rest of the show is perfect.
BJ, what say you?
No notes. I have literally no notes for the show. I think it was absolutely perfect. I am desperate to see who they cast for the other endless siblings. I am desperate to see who they're going to cast for Delirium. I absolutely am excited to see who they cast for Destiny, Destruction. I think there was another one in there. But those are the three I'm most excited for. And I'm pretty sure we'll get, because I know they keep saying the prodigal son returning. And that alludes to, I think it's Destruction kind of abandons his post a bit in the comic. And Delirium wasn't originally known as Delirium. They actually, something happened to them to force them to change into Delirium. I believe they were Delight originally. So I'm very excited to see those stories play out and see how they do those stories. But other than that, it was perfect. No notes. I loved it.
Nice. Eric, what about you?
For me, the first half of the show was much, much stronger than the second half. When I say second half, I mean after episode 6, so like 7 through 10. I guess I just didn't like the character of Rose and the Dream Vortex just being this MacGuffin. As somebody who hasn't read the comics at all, it just felt like such a weird, obtuse kind of thing that...
That doesn't really pay off at the end?
Yeah. Because
there isn't really a resolution to it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you there, for sure.
I mean, there were good things that happened in those episodes. Like, the serial convention was neat, and oddball characters, the misfit toys, if you will, from the house were cool. But yeah, that pacing of that story, just storyline, just felt a little off to me. I guess because it wasn't as Morpheus-centric. There were so many other people.
Oh, honey. I hate to break it to you. This show is not Morpheus-centric. if that's a thing, let me just tell you now, if it keeps going, you get less and less of Morpheus. Because it's really, Sandman is an anthology show, a series, whatever. Morpheus is there. And sometimes there are Morpheus-centric, like the endless stories and all that. But that's almost like the, you know how like X-Files had the mythology episodes and they would do like Monster of the Week? It's more Monster of the Week or, you know, arc, really. So,
I'm not saying Morpheus has to be in every single scene. I'm just, it's just that character that of Rose, her storyline did really do anything for me.
Yeah, I hear that because like one of the bonus episodes, the one with Calliope and Matic and all that, very little Morpheus, but it was a great episode. Same thing with the 24/7. It was very little Morpheus in it, but. Yeah, there's a way to be able to kind of balance out the interest with it. And Rose's story just felt a little meh compared to the rest of it. For me, the pacing of like the first episode or two, it was a little tough not having been a reader of the graphic novel. It felt like it slogged through the intro. And I know there's a lot of world building you have to do. That was like my biggest issue, was trying to get through that and understand what's going on. But then once the story picked up, I definitely enjoyed it, and I hope to see more Sandman in the future. I think we also touched on some of the things that we're excited or hopeful for a season two and beyond. So, dear listeners, if you have watched and enjoyed the show, we would love to have more in-depth conversations. Hit us up. We would love to talk about it with you. Comment, share your thoughts, DM us, email us, whatever you would like to. And we'd be happy to talk more Sandman. We'll be back in 2 more weeks with our next pop culture roundup. A couple of us will probably be a little older by that point when the episode comes out. Check us out online, flameonshow.com, patreon.com/flameonshow. And with that, dear listeners, Bobby Itch. Bye. I'm gonna go twerk with a crystal flute now. Gotta go, bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.